Sports Talk. Apparently, it's been really such a long time since we've had Jay Jaffe on the program. He forgot. He didn't even realize a segment was happening today. I'm like, come on, man. The season starts tomorrow. This is what happens. I leave town. He goes on vacation. Next thing you know, it's been like a month. And after all these years, Jay is just ready to kick us to the curb. Oh, my goodness. It's crazy.
Oh, man, Steve.
I feel so, well, I kind of predicted this would happen. I even told Adrian, hey, let's see if Jay even remembers the hit before we even start this. And sure enough, he was at the supermarket. I like that. Jay completely forgot.
Oh, man. You know what? Hey, maybe he's getting some beer for his segment, Steve.
I hope so. I hope he's tanked when he does the segment with us. That would be a lot of fun. Knowing Jay the way I do, it'll be a much more colorful section if he's indulging in some double IPAs or some porters or something like that. So, yeah, we're going to try and break early and give Jay more time to end the hour. We'll do that here as we continue on Sports Talk. And there's also a lot to talk about with Jay. In fact, I mean, I don't know if you've been following what's going on with the Marlins, but this is really interesting with Jazz Chisholm, who apparently was ripping Miguel Rojas. And I don't really know about this one that really kind of happened. They were teammates, I guess, from 2020 to 2022, which was Jazz's first three seasons in the big leagues. And then during an appearance on a podcast called The Pivot, Chisholm referred to the period as, quote, the worst 3 years of probably my life, and took multiple shots at an unidentified team captain, which was apparently the reference to Miguel Rojas. Pretty crazy.
This is crazy, knowing that Jazz Chisholm, they're just kind of going back at each other, and they haven't been teammates for a while, or at least two seasons, Steve. So the fact that he's even hashing this out on a podcast is kind of weird. At least before the season gets underway,
the comments were even crazier. What he had to say. Listen to this. You can't be a team leader when you've got guys that's been in the clubhouse, that's been in there 9 or 10, or even though they suck. They've been there for 9 or 10 years, and the team calls them the team captain, but they're not a good captain. They're not a good person. You're not even a good athlete at this point. You're just here, and you're bringing down the young guys that are supposed to be good. Well, you know what this reminds me of? This reminds me of Alberto. Because when Alberto really gets on one of his rants, he doesn't hold back. He just lets it fly. And our listeners love it. They want more Alberto. They demand it on social. They get in. They want to hear more. When I hear about Jazz just ripping Miguel Rojas because, as he said, he sucks, Alberto, I think about you and your unfiltered raw takes when you really get fired up on this show.
I'll take that as a compliment, and thank you very much.
You should be. That's the way it was intended. And listeners love it. I mean, they do. By the way, is it difficult because you know that it's so easy for you to get fired up and you could just go off on a tangent and all of a sudden some of our listeners are like screaming and yelling yes and just saying and they want more? Or is it just one of those things where it has to be real? It has to like flow naturally, because the truth is that's not like your normal, that's not just your normal personality. Like, you have to get fired up. And when you get fired up and you really get passionate about it, that's when that type of a personality comes out.
Yeah. So, there's just like a couple topics that if, they're brought up, that it can lead to, me going off on a tangent and an emotional tangent, and I'm susceptible to these things. So
yes,
I have to be careful when these topics come up. Like, for example, the one instance where this happened, where I kind of snapped at someone over what they were believing or thinking and expressing, was one time Joe Rod, and was watching the UTEP Miners at the district. It was me, Adrian, Jason Williams, and Joe Rod. And Joe Rod started saying about how we have to demand more since players are getting paid. And I just went off. I just remembered, I remembered at the end of it, I was like, I don't even know this man. And I pretty much was raising my voice. I was like, I'm walking out of here with no friends.
You went off on Joe Rod?
A little bit. I was telling him, like, there's still players. I mean, they're still human. We can't demand perfection. And I was just like, at the end of it, I was like, "Well, you really went off there."
Adrian, do you remember this instance?
Yes, I do remember this instance.
Yes.
Yeah, I would say that you're right. I mean, Alberto, he put it perfectly. When there is a topic that he feels very passionate, he can't just step in the studio and you ask him, "Hey, Alberto, let's go on a rant right now." We got to bring up the pressure point. And once the pressure point is brought up, he's like the pressure cooker. And so he ends up steaming up a little bit and getting a little fired up about a certain topic. And then you'll hear an Alberto rant.
Interesting. Interesting. All right. Well, are we going to try to bait him into a rant today? Or are we just going to, you know, let the sleeping giant, be okay.
If we brought up things like facilities or things like attendance, things like, if NIL money is being promised to an athlete, should you give them half at the start, half at the end, stuff like that. We've had people suggest that here on this show. I'm not saying I believe in it. I'm just saying these are some of the topics that in the past we brought up that I've sensed a little fiery a little bit of fiery takes coming from Alberto when it comes to that.
Ah, okay. That's fine. I was just kind of curious as to how that works. But anyway, it's good to know that, you never know when something might happen. By the way, Alberto, just out of curiosity, do you believe Shohei Ohtani is innocent or guilty in this this latest gambling scandal?
To me, Shohei Ohtani is guilty, just because it's kind of difficult to believe he had nothing. He didn't know anything at all. But also, I think if you kind of look back at some of his appearances at professional sporting events, you're just like, this guy looks like he's sweating bets right now. So I think he was definitely having some fun.
Okay. Do you think anything's going to happen to Shohei when it's all said and done?
No. He's going to play out the whole season. Ipe Mitsuhara will probably go to jail or maybe cut a deal, and they'll be hanging out in Cancun in a couple off seasons, I think.
Do you think Shohei's above the law?
Yes. Okay. For the MLB, yes.
Yeah. All right, that's fine. Should we ask? We got to get Jay's thoughts on this. Aren't you fascinated with what Jaffe's going to say about the Ohtani situation?
You know what? Yes, I'm fascinated about Jay Jaffe because obviously I want to know, does this taint anything from Shohei Ohtani? Does this taint the season in itself? I mean, we've had a lot of Shohei Ohtani lovers on the show, Gator Richard being one of them.
Oh, Gator loves him.
How is he going to respond to this right here?
Gator's going to defend him.
But he's NFLE. He's all about the entertainment. He's about the conspiracy. So we have to actually throw the conspiracy back at him.
This is like the ultimate Gator Richard whammy that we're talking about right now. Because this is the greatest conspiracy story ever, saying that Shohei has a gambling problem and is using his interpreter as the designated fall guy for this whole thing. That's the kind of thing Gator Richard would call in and tell us about.
Yeah, and the fact that, you know what? We don't hear from him when controversy happens to players he roots for or teams he roots for. He gets a little quiet, and then we're going to hear from him about an off-topic subject, and then we got to bring in this to the table.
Speaking of off-topic, I'm so happy you mentioned that. Random point I have not brought up on Sports Talk just because we haven't had a lot of shows, and this week we've been so busy with our programs. Okay, last week, folks, Adrian and I had the opportunity to meet Lalo. Lalo is Eduardo Lalo Gonzalez, the grandson of Don Julio. And I had the chance to do a sit-down interview with Lalo and Rob Gerard, who is the founder of the Tequila Collective, and they were in town last weekend for a very special tequila-themed dinner and a whole tequila symposium that happened out at the Plaza Hotel in downtown El Paso. Now, a couple things before I get to my real point here. The Plaza is gorgeous, one of the nicest hotels I've been to. Ambar is unbelievable, and because it was my first trip there, the first thing I said is, wow. How many more places like this are in downtown El Paso that I have not visited that are just spectacular must visits? So right then and there, Adrian, my first trip this past week was amazing, having the chance to join you and talk to Lalo.
Yeah, Plaza Hotel is incredible. The area that they had us interview Lalo, it was like beautiful. It was like a beautiful meeting room and stuff like that. We didn't even get to check out the rooftop, which is incredible as well at the Plaza. But downstairs, they've got tremendous food. And yeah, that, to hear from Lalo himself and just hear how he is so proud of this tequila and also proud of the reception that he's gotten from people. And then hearing from Rob, too, who's really kind of the who's who when it comes to grading and judging tequilas. It was really cool to be involved with this kind of environment and this kind of category here in El Paso. El Paso should be a tequila staple, and we need more events like this in the city moving forward.
We taped a 16-minute interview with both of them and put it up on our 600 ESPN El Paso YouTube page. So if you have not been to our YouTube site in a while for 600 ESPN, check that out. It is a very, very entertaining interview, and I loved it. And that was great. And meeting those guys and being around them was true. I'm a fan of Lalo. So is Adrian. I got Adrian a bottle of Lalo for his birthday last year. And, you know, to me, that's some of the best stuff you're going to drink. So interviewing a guy whose product we love is one thing. Now, the reason I brought up Lalo is because he told us that Don Julio, it's his grandfather, never came out with a tequila called Real Real. Now, if all of you are wondering, well, what does this have to do with anything? That is the tequila that supposedly Augustine promised us years ago that cost over $1,000 a bottle at the time, that got held up at the bridge, and as a result, for years, was confiscated and never allowed to be brought over on the bridge. Now, think about this, folks. His family created and owned Don Julio, and this was supposed to be the most limited bottle they make. Lalo never heard of Real Real. He heard of Real. That's the high end that they've always had. He never heard of a second Real, which to me debunked the whole Augustine theory and told me that just like Augustine's pro basketball career in Mexico, this phantom bottle of tequila that supposedly was held up over the bridge for years upon years never happened. So that was, to me, my number one takeaway from my meeting with Lalo last week.
I forgot about that, and I'm so happy you brought this up. I can't stop laughing here because this is so funny. It's so true, though, Steve. We got to call out Augustine on all the crap that he's trying to pull on this show. And, oh, this excuse. Oh, Steve, I'm going to bring it. This fantasy football draft, I'm coming by Tuesday. And then he stops by. Oh, it got held up again, and it wasn't ready. But it should be ready by tomorrow or next week. It's never happened. It never, ever happened. And Augustine has been living off this lie for a while.
For those of you that don't know, in 2015, Augustine told us on the air, I've got the rarest bottle of tequila that I can get you, and will you let us host the show if I bring you the tequila? I said, you bring me this, whatever it is, sure. And he was telling me about it, told me stories about it, said it's the most, you know, it's the most sought after thing that they make. And trust me, for a while I believed it and I thought it might happen. And then, of course, it never came to fruition, just like his pro basketball career that he swore he played professionally in Mexico, yet no pictures, no documentation, no nothing is actually a result of that. That's like saying, hey, I played pro baseball. Yeah, I was on a Sandlot team that was in the backfields in El Paso and spent a couple of weekends playing some fun pickup ball. But, oh, yeah, it was pro baseball in El Paso. Please.
You know what? The next time Augustine calls in, we just have to say, look, I know you want to talk about this story, but we can't. I'm sorry. We've got to address this topic because there's a chance that he's not listening right now. So we got to address this conspiracy and debunk it on the radio with him next time he calls in.
The tequila is not real. Or as I say, real. Real. Thank you.
Oh, man.
Oh. All right. Here's what we're going to do. We'll take a break for SportsCenter. We'll take the break after that. Come back with Jay Jaffe, who will be back from the supermarket. Then we can get our baseball preview to end the hour as Sports Talk continues. But right now, back to Adrian with the latest. Day on Friday. Excited about that. Excited also about the fact that our next guest can join us to talk a little baseball and beer. Hopefully. I mean, we'll see if we can do it. All right. He's back. And this, you know, to me, it's never baseball season without Jay Jaffe. Let's just put it that way. He joins us every week from Fangraphs. Look, it's been a while, so I get it, man. If you haven't been on the show in the last 3-4 weeks, I can understand how we got a little mixed up today.
Yeah, I went to the grocery store and found myself in the middle of the meat aisle. What do you call it? Had to beat a hasty exit there, but we're okay.
That's fitting. The fact that we called during the meat aisle experience, that is perfect. That's exactly the way I'd want it to be, Jay. It's so good. All right, you held a chat yesterday at Fangraphs.com. I know you're ready for baseball, just like a lot of us are ready for baseball. There's still distractions. The Shohei Ohtani situation could linger into part of the baseball season. Do you feel like this is something that potentially could be a major shockwave as more information is learned?
You know, if you're asking me, do I think Ohtani is going to be suspended? No. I think his explanation, and the more we learn about his interpreter, the more it sounds like his interpreter was misrepresenting himself to Ohtani and to other people systematically. I mean, he lied about his employment in translating for other players as well. So this is a guy who doesn't have a lot of credibility. What we've learned also from several people who are familiar with the roles of the Asian interpreters is that it's not uncommon for them to do things like help out handling a player's money. So, you know, I don't think Ohtani has, guilty of anything here other than naivete. That said, I think his team, by which I mean his agent and his PR team, probably mishandled this pretty badly, and it's cost him a lot in terms of public opinion. That's a price he's going to continue to pay probably for a while as this all unfolds. But now that the explanations that we've gotten basically put the onus on an investigation that, you know, we expect to find wrongdoing on the part of the interpreter here, and that should more or less close the book on this once it's completed.
Meanwhile, while this whole situation is unfolding, how about the fact that the Dodgers gave Will Smith today $140 million for 10 years? Listen to this. Apparently, he's going to be paid $400,000 per year over each of the next 10 seasons, and then $11.6 million per year as deferred compensation with no interest in the 10 years following.
Huh. That's interesting. It's kind of along the lines of the Ohtani contract in terms of deferring it that far down the road and lowering the sticker price of it once you factor in inflation. So, you know, in that regard, it's probably a pretty good deal for the Dodgers, and it's not a bad one for Smith, who's going to be earning money long after he retires.
I agree, but I'll say this. $400,000 per year over each of the next 10 seasons, that won't really cover what most expenses are in Southern California. So I'm thinking about that and saying, man, I mean, either Will Smith has been very smart with his money and has tucked it away right now, but when you're his age and you're essentially playing for the MLB minimum for the next 10 years, that makes me wonder how he's going to be able to pull that off living in SoCal.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, this is a guy who's had two seasons here where he's made multi-millions, $8.5 million. He was scheduled to make $8.55 million this year, at $5.5 million last year. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, I hope he's got some tucked away, but I imagine he does. I don't think he'd be doing this if he didn't think that this would all work out. I also don't know what kind of background his family has, if he's got sitting on generational wealth either. But it is a very interesting structure. I don't think we've seen it quite like that. And I wonder if there's a something with regards to the union that will cause this to be revised so that he is at least receiving the minimum salary.
I agree with you. Jay Jaffe joining us here on Sports Talk as we continue from Fangraphs.com. All right, with all the talk about the Dodgers, are they still your pick to win the National League and go to the World Series?
I called it, I chose the Braves in the staff pool because I have learned never to be too disappointed. At least I'll be professionally right if the Dodgers don't go as far as I might hope in my the still beating fan heart of mine. I think that the Braves are pretty strong. I think it's a toss-up. I think the Dodgers have enough question marks about their rotations that this is not, going to be a 110-win powerhouse of a team.
Yeah.
They've got a lot of injuries, guys on with workload constraints. So we're just going to have to wait and see how it all unfolds.
Meanwhile, look at what the Arizona Diamondbacks did. They grabbed Jordan Montgomery for a one-year contract and probably a very smart move if you're Arizona, knowing you just lost Eduardo Rodriguez for a period of time and you needed another starter behind Gallen and Kelly. Now you get it in Montgomery. Did this contract signing look worse for teams like the Yankees and others that could have used that starting pitcher and chose not to go after Jordan Montgomery?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look, the Yankees are up against it in terms of the competitive balance tax. So signing Montgomery for $30 million this year would have cost them another $36 million in taxes because they are on the fourth tier threshold for penalties. So, that's not inconsiderable, but when you think about the marginal gains to be had that come with winning in the World Series, it probably pays for itself down the road. I think some of the other teams that were pursuing him are probably have tax ramifications as well, if not necessarily as big as the Yankees. I think the Red Sox could have used him, for example. But the Diamondbacks, I don't believe, are in a position where they're going to be taxed, so this is just money to them. And I think this is a pretty good move for them in an NL West picture that looks pretty crowded right now behind the Dodgers.
That's true. That is very true. As we continue here with Jay Jaffe from Fangraphs. All right, shifting it over to the American League. And we talked about the Yankees a moment ago. Do you still like the Orioles bringing Corbin Burns on board? And are they your pick this year in the AL? Or are you sticking with the Rangers, the Astros, or one of those AL West teams to get it done?
Yeah, I actually chose the Orioles in our staff poll, which will be released tomorrow. I think when you look at the Rangers and the Astros, both of those teams have a lot of questions about their starting pitching. I mean, the Rangers are waiting on Scherzer and DeGrom and Tyler Mahle to come back from injuries this year. They also lost Jordan Montgomery, who came up big for them down the stretch and in the World Series. It's a very different rotation than what they had last year. So, I think the Orioles, I think while we only have them projected for 84 wins, I think that underrates them a bit. We saw last year, our projection systems tend to underrate players with little to no major league experience, and they've got a lot of good ones, including Jackson Holliday, who will start the year in the minors but should play a major role for them at some point.
Who's your sleeper team in the American League? And for that matter, the National League, who do you like that right now might be not on the radar?
Oh, geez, I suppose probably the Mariners. I like the strength of their starting pitching. and if I had to in the National League, maybe the Giants, because I like a lot of what they did, particularly late in the spring by adding Chapman and Snell.
Yeah, that's good, too. I agree with you, and I feel like especially, you get Snell the way they did. Sometimes, I guess, it pays to hold out till the end, right? I mean, look, Snell and Montgomery were the two biggest high-profile free agent pitchers left, and they both ended up staying in the National League West and not signing with the Dodgers.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of an arms race there, and while I don't expect either of them to catch Los Angeles, there's certainly advantages to be had by finishing ahead of the other team, and so for the Diamondbacks, again, getting Montgomery was a good counter to San Francisco adding Snell.
We find out today Matt McClain gets shoulder surgery, and he's going to be out for an indefinite period of time. Given how well he played in his rookie season, this is a big blow to the Cincinnati Reds out there in the NL Central.
Yeah, this is the second infielder they've lost from what seemed to be a really huge stockpile at the coming into the season. They lost Noelvi Marti to an 80-game PED suspension. They've got still got Jonathan India, They still have Jamer Candelario, their big free agent signing from the winter, and they've got a lot of young infielders, Ellie De La Cruz, Christian Encarnacion Strand as well. McLean was very good for them this past season and looked to be their regular second baseman.
Meanwhile, as you mentioned a moment ago, we will have the Fangraphs predictions for tomorrow, where you will have both the American League and National League. And, Jay, did you get a chance to be part of both, or were you just in one league?
Both. I'm in both. It's just our annual staff poll.
Okay. Now, as we get ready to wrap things up, beer pick of the week. It's been a while. You've probably tried a lot of beers since we last spoke. Is there one in particular that you're getting ready to crack open on opening day?
Oh, yeah. I got from my friends at Torch and Crown their Bat Flip Spring Ale. This is the one that they pay tribute to the KBO tradition of bat flipping. Let's see here. I can't remember exactly the specs, but I ordered a case of assorted Torch and Crown beers. This is a Manhattan-based brewery. With that in mind, once I saw that was on sale, and I actually had one earlier to commemorate the start of the season in Korean style as well.
You've talked about it with us before. 5.4% ABV is what it's all about, and this is an ale that I guess is not a year-round ale, Jay. They brew this just for the spring. That's the idea.
Yeah, and it's just one I look forward to every year. It's probably my favorite can design of any beer anywhere right now, just because you don't see baseball theme and particularly the celebratory bat flip. If they made a T-shirt of it, I'd buy it. Let's put it that way.
Good stuff. All right, listen, enjoy tomorrow. Enjoy opening day. We'll look forward to spending the rest of the baseball season with you each week, and thanks for the time and joining us on the show.
All right, sounds great, Steve. Thanks a lot.
Jay Jaffe, folks. Follow him on Twitter at @Jay_Jaffe. Check out all of his great work at Fangraphs.com. We got hour number two coming up. Still to come, Jeff Erickson. He'll talk a little fantasy baseball and give us his predictions. Stay with us. Kirk Gross at 6 from Overfly Bat Company as we continue 600 ESPN El Paso. All right, hour number two is underway. Welcome back, everybody. We also have Alberto Urueta here with us today. He is, kind of like Jazz Chisholm. You never know what's going to happen and when he's going to just unload on somebody. Luckily, he hasn't done it on the two of us, AJ. Isn't it nice that in the middle of the show, he hasn't really just, gone off on us the way he went off on Joe Rod when you guys were at the district a few weeks ago?
Yeah, he has our back, and I would be proud to say that, somebody like Alberto's got my back.
Yeah. Alberto, you feel pretty confident about that?
Yeah, I feel good about it.
All right, man. That's good. Happy to hear that. All right, we've got more coming up in these next 2 hours. Oh, my God. Jeff Erickson's going to join us in about 15 minutes from rotowire.com. Kirk Rose still to show up as well and be with us here in our 600 ESPN El Paso River Oaks Properties Schoolyard Sports Studios. 505-6009. That is our telephone number. Chihuahuas baseball begins on Friday. We will have all the action as your El Paso Chihuahuas get ready for the 2024 season in Albuquerque as they take on the Isotopes. 6:35. That's going to get underway. Story time with Hags is going to lead us off on our Friday 6 o'clock hour special, and then we'll go right into Hags at the bottom of the hour. No Sweet 16 action for us on Friday. In fact, college basketball is going to navigate itself this weekend around the Chihuahua schedule, Adrian. So that's also something to note as we head into the weekend.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And you know what? For the rest of between now all the way through, we're talking probably, late September, right, Steve? We're talking Chihuahuas baseball on 600 ESPN El Paso. Tim Haggerty, he goes into hibernation. He sells copies of Tales from the Dugout, at home and stuff like that. that. He doesn't really have to do that. But he now will be joining us on our airwaves. I cannot wait. And he joined us a couple weeks ago just to kind of give us a little preview. So I can't wait for Tim fully back each and every night to talk Chihuahuas baseball.
I can't either. I think it's going to be fantastic. So that's all coming up. And I don't even know if we're going to air the games tomorrow starting at 5. It looks like tomorrow, Friday, which is Good Friday, we'll have the Chihuahuas in Albuquerque starting at 6:30. We'll have the Chihuahuas Albuquerque Saturday at 6:30, Sunday at 1:30 as well. And then looking at the schedule, looks like on Saturday, Adrian, we're going to have the Men's Division II championship basketball game.
That's right. And also I saw that next week when it comes to the Final Four, we will air games all the way up until Chihuahuas baseball. So be on the lookout for that. And then, of course, for the big one, that will be, I believe it's Monday, April 8th. We'll have all the coverage for the national championship.
That's right. It's going to be a big one. Matter of fact, I think we're going to start an hour early that day because we're going to be live at Border City Ale House. So very good chance that we go on at 3 on Monday the 8th and go from 3 to 4:30. Then we'll go to NCAA Championship Monday and then the National Championship game broadcast, which will get started at 5:30. And I think the game tips off at 7:20, so they have an extended preview coming up on Monday night.
Wow, that's really well, you know what I'll say this. If we are talking about an El Paso kid playing in the National Championship again for a second straight year like Tristan Newton did last year and won it with UConn, that'll be my goal there for the big one, National Championship Monday, April 8th.
Yeah, that would be something to watch. Now, let me ask you this. Is that one of your bucket list trips going to the Final Four, or you've already done that, haven't you?
Done it twice, man.
Yeah,
done
so
it twice.
Did you get a chance to watch the games?
I watched the first
semifinal.
Yes, and actually the first year I'd had the opportunity to watch, like, they had a Reese's, you know how they do the Reese's Senior Bowl? They did a Reese's, like, college basketball all-star game in that weekend as well, so it was just incredible. It was like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
All right, so as far as you're concerned,
but I would still want to happen. Next year, Steve, I believe it's San Antonio, if I'm not mistaken. And this year it's Phoenix. So it's not like this is out of the realm of possibility here for the future.
No, I feel like it could easily happen. But you, when you pulled that off, that was through UTEP at the time, correct?
That was through UTEP, and it was through the U.S. Basketball Writers Association. They had a college program, like an outreach program. And the first one was at NRG Stadium, yes, where the Texans play in Houston. And the second one was at the Alamo Dome in San Antonio.
I like it. All right. Well, listen, that's part of the fun, is getting the opportunity to be part of those networks. And you tell me, when you watched that first game, that semifinal game, were you sitting way up, or were you actually good seats?
So, no, Steve, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to misspeak here. For those Final Four games, they had, like, a specific area, but they did not allow us to actually go into the actual arena. So we were backstage access, all the media rooms, all the food and all that kind of stuff, but none of the actual seats.
Oh, so they had, like, a big TV monitor set up for
you? It was like
you?
That. That was available for everybody, yes.
Okay. So it was fun, but it wasn't as good as it could have been.
From my perspective, it was all I wanted, right? Because I got a chance to talk to all the coaches and players and stuff like that. So that was the cool part. And I was a little nervous college kid. So I was out there trying to ask maybe one question to everybody. Remember asking one to Buddy Hield, who played for Oklahoma. Devontae Graham played for Kansas. But it's madness, Steve. There's like a million different outlets. It's like the Super Bowl Radio Row. There's a million different outlets out there, and they all do different things.
By the way, I'm looking at the schedule of broadcasts for this weekend for the college basketball, you know, the Elite Eight and then the Final Four. The reason we're broadcasting the Division II championship game at 12:45 on Saturday and not the regional finals is that the coverage starts at 4 and our coverage starts at 6:30. So they're going to overlap each other. So there's really not a way for us to put either game on and air it in its entirety Saturday or Sunday, because Sunday the games start at 12 noon on Sunday, and Chihuahua starts at 1:30. So again, it's difficult in the sense that too many of these game times this weekend are overlapping, and with Chihuahuas baseball, we just are not able to deliver the games in their entirety.
Do you feel like this tournament is a little later than in years past? Like it just kind of feels a little later? I mean, saying Monday, April 8th for the national championship date seems a little late into the process, but I guess it's just how the calendar shook out this year.
Yeah, I'm kind of wondering what next year's Final Four is going to be like and where the, you know, how late they're going to go also. And that also makes you kind of wonder, doesn't it? Is that, as you talked about, you know, next year is going to be in San Antonio. And by the way, April 7th will be the Monday game and Saturday, April 5th. So, but then it goes to April 4th and 6th, April 3rd and 5th, April 1st and 3rd, March 31st and April 2nd. And then back to April 6th and 8th in 2030. So it's, you know, you're right. These are later dates. And for us, the hardest part is as it gets later and later, now baseball season starts to interact with it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I was noticing, Steve, you look really, you know, you look in the future. The fact that it's San Antonio next year, that's pretty cool. The fact that it's going out to AT&T Stadium, Jerry World in 2030, that's going to be a really cool thing in itself. So for those people who are in this area who are huge college basketball fans, I mean, even this year, Phoenix, not a far trip whatsoever. You can make that trip and go out and watch some Final Four high-quality basketball here, you know, in the coming years.
You know what else is weird, though? I'm looking at all the regional sites for these next 2 years. There's really, you would think Texas would have a lot. Next year, Texas has none. There is not a single region that's being hosted in Texas. In fact, the closest to us would probably be, believe it or not, Denver. They're getting a first and second round site. Other than that, you've got nowhere close. In fact, San Francisco is where the West Regional is going to be, and that's about it. It is a very eastern, centrally located NCAA tournament next year.
Wow, I'm looking at this right now. I mean, you've got places like Raleigh, North Carolina, Wichita, Kansas, Lexington, Kentucky, all hosting first and second round matchups in the NCAA tournament next year. So yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking it's irresponsible of me to say for UTEP, right? Like I'm thinking, where could we be next year if UTEP went on a magical run?
You know what's weird though? Tucson doesn't get regionals like they used to anymore. They're not on the list. Albuquerque is not on the list. In fact, in 2026, in the first and second rounds, you've got San Diego and you've got Oklahoma City. And other than that, nothing's close. But the South region is in Houston and the West region's in San Jose. So, you know, you think about it, Adrian, and realistically, these next 2 years, there are not a lot of first and second round venues that are even close to El Paso. Nothing is close around here.
Yeah, you're really traveling. And maybe, you know what, can I say, it's unfair of me to say, right, Northeast bias, right? It just feels like the West is so spread out and we're trying to fight for some spots in Texas or some spots at least closer to us. But yeah, it's just a reality, unfortunately, right here that you're seeing. It's going to California. It's going to the Pacific Northwest instead of being here in the South or Southwest with Texas, Arizona, New Mexico.
Alberto, does this bother you? Do you feel like this is not right that the NCAA is essentially eliminating the Southwest and the West Coast when it comes to a lot of these early round games?
Yeah, it does bother me, especially since there's more than a couple of teams within the state of Texas that they can make some noise in the tournament run. But when you start thinking about it logistically, it does start to make sense, and I understand. And I also know that my feelings are kind of tamed by the fact that I know that a lot of these decisions are made by money, and that's kind of the main reason these sites are chosen. So yeah, it's not about anything else. So that kind of calms me down. But yeah, it's a little frustrating, especially when Texas has so many great venues.
Well, think about this. True. Okay. I mean, you look at really the future of the Final Four. So you have San Antonio next year, but that's it. And you also have AT&T Stadium in 2030. So San Antonio in 2025, North Texas in 2030, right? Other than that, Albuquerque right now does not have a region. Tucson does not have a region. Austin does not have a region, even with that new arena. So as much as we talk about building an arena to then land an eventual NCAA tournament regional, it's not as easy as it sounds, because you would think Austin would be bidding on it and wanting to put a region there, and yet next year and the following year, there are no NCAA regionals in any of those markets, which makes me wonder, again, how difficult is it, and does the NCAA really want to be around this area?
Yeah, and it's a reality check, right, to all that thought. I mean, and then even if it, I mean, best case scenario, right, Steve, best, absolute best case scenario, and they somehow land it, then it's a one-off, and you're not going to have it for that next season. So yep, it's just not a reality that would happen. I'm looking at a lot of these venues, by the way. It's a lot of NBA venues as well. So they like the NBA venues. When it comes to the Final Four, that's when they'll go into the NFL stadiums and try to max out the capacity of how many people they could stuff in those seats.
Yeah, I mean, look at where the regional finals are, and that's really interesting too. You've got the Prudential Center, the Chase Center, State Farm Arena, Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. You've got other places like the United Center in Chicago, Toyota Center in Houston, DC's Capital One Arena. Those are all, yeah, you're right, NBA arenas is where they are. And then the actual championship games, you're all in Lucas Oil Stadium, the Alamo Dome, Ford Field, Allegiant Stadium, AT&T. That seems to be what the NCAA wants. They want a football stadium for the championship, and then they also want NBA arenas for the regions.
Yeah, and they're also headquartered out of Indianapolis, so they have a lot of spots in the state of Indiana or around that area too. So they like the Midwest, they like the Northeast, and that's probably where they're sticking.
All right, tell you what, we're sticking with fantasy baseball next, and Jeff Erickson, that's coming up right after Charlie One. He's back 17 past as Sports Talk continues. 21 past the hour as we continue here on Sports Talk. Time to talk a little fantasy baseball. We've got Jeff Erickson back with us right now from rotowire.com, your one-stop shop for all fantasy sports. Check them out. Baseball season is here. They've got the last-minute picks you need for baseball and who to target and all sorts of other great columns as we get ready for opening day tomorrow. Well, I'll tell you what. When we look at everything, Jeff, a lot of storylines, a lot of interesting storylines, both good and bad. But nonetheless, hope springs eternal, especially when we've got the start of baseball season.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy opening day eve. I'm super excited about the season starting tomorrow. Steve, I actually had my last draft on Saturday, so kind of had some time to kind of just like go over my teams, figure out where I'm strong. We plan those first weeks, a week of free agents. Had a fab run in some leagues on Sunday night. But, you know, just kind of gearing up, getting ready, doing our last little peruse over at the 30,000 feet level.
Do you like where you're at right now, at least at this point in time?
Mostly. I've got a couple leagues. One, I think I drafted in January. It looks absolutely tragic right now, but I'm sure it'll be fine later. And another one where, you know, and leagues where I have Paul Sewald and Matt McClain, I'm kind of scrambling a little bit there. You know, got both of those players early in draft season before we ran into the issues that we have right now.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's nothing you can do with that. That's tough more than anything else. And regarding somebody like Sewald, you know, I guess Kevin Ginkle is now the latest player that could have an opportunity to benefit in his absence.
Yeah, sure looks like it. You know, everything. You know, Torrey Lovallo came short of outright naming him, but kind of hinted at saying it's an obvious choice. You know, Ginkle had a great playoff run last year, great second half of the season. So, yeah, he's available in a lot of leagues, too. So, yeah, got to do a lot of bidding. And it was interesting, this news on Sewald dropped on Monday. So, you know, anybody that bid on free agents last week probably didn't have him. Maybe, although a friend of mine said, you know, he drafted Sewald on Saturday in the 29th round just because he liked the Diamondbacks' half-week schedule there, just was planning on using him. You know, that's looking ahead, looking at schedules, looking to say, okay, maybe I'll steal a win or at least have a couple of good innings, where not all of your starters are going that first week of the season.
Yeah, that's true. And once again, you know, you never truly know when it comes to speculation and how guys are going to go until you start to see how the season unfolds. Storylines, injuries. We find out today one of your favorite players on the team, Matt McClain, because you're a Cincinnati Reds fan, going to be out a while with that shoulder surgery. Again, you knew he was hurt. You didn't know to the extent, not the news you wanted.
Not the news we wanted, but not surprising news nonetheless. It's the news we feared. When it came back that they found something in the MRI, that was pretty scary enough, and that he was going for a second opinion. They went straight from second opinion immediately having the surgery. And, you know, I've only got him playing like 34 games this year. The Reds aren't certain on the timetable, but I'm taking a pretty pessimistic route on this one here. I don't think we'll see a whole lot of him this year because of the two issues in that shoulder. So, and you know, the fact that he had surgery, and usually shoulder surgery takes a long time to recover from. So, which means Jonathan India is going to get a ton of playing time at second base. I know they got Santiago Espinal. He's kind of a utility infielder, but I think we're going to see a heavy dose of India.
I think so, too. And he was also the subject of trade rumors the last couple seasons. And now it looks like he's going to get, paid off for sticking around and keeping him.
Well, yeah. I mean, they have three big injuries already. Well, three big issues. Not just Matt McClain, but TJ Friedl's going to miss a couple months with his wrist injury. And Nuelve Marte suspended for 80 games. So all that depth that the Reds had has just been eviscerated. You know, at one point in the season, like, why did they sign Jamer Candelario? Oh, well, turns out that, thank goodness they did.
Yeah, that's right. I guess the truth is you can never have enough players. You never have enough pitchers. You never know when injuries are going to just decimate your team. Let's talk about the latest pitching signing, and that's Jordan Montgomery going to Arizona. That just went down. Thoughts on the Diamondbacks landing Monty?
Oh, I think it's smart by them. I mean, it's a one-year deal. I mean, yes, it's a lot of money for 1 year with a player option that has to vest first. So they got a little bit of, I think he has to pitch at least 10 games for it to vest, but or 10 starts for it to vest. So, the thing is, I don't think anybody's confusing Montgomery with a top-of-the-market pitcher, but he's a very good pitcher on a team that just lost Eduardo Rodriguez for at least a month. So, and the NL West has gotten tough. The Giants have kind of girded up a couple of times here with some of their signings. So the Diamondbacks couldn't be complacent with what they just had. So, yeah, I think you'll see Montgomery need a couple weeks to ramp up. You'll see Tommy Henry get at least one start. Ryan Nelson has been kind of a trendy guy this spring. He's going to be in the rotation too. Gives them some depth in that rotation. You know, now you start off with Gallen. You've got Merrill Kelly.
Yep.
Brandon Pfaadt had a big postseason, so he's pretty secure in a spot. But now, all of a sudden, you add Montgomery to the mix, and this is a deeper rotation.
Imagine when Eduardo Rodriguez is back, and you can actually go five deep with quality five starters.
Absolutely. And I'd say keep an eye on Ryan Nelson, too. Really showed some good stuff this spring. It looks like his K rate tricked up. You know, one of those guys that worked hard in the offseason to improve. And, you know, he was a prospect at one point in time. He's kind of a post-type sleeper type, too. So we'll watch him, too. And now that's finally we get the last noteworthy free agent signed. After all the NFL free agents have already been signed. It's kind of amazing. But here we are. At least it was done before opening day.
Jeff Erickson with us from RotoWire.com as we continue. Jackson Holliday does not make the Baltimore roster despite his terrific spring. Wyatt Langford does. Texas added him and wants to start him immediately and see how he can handle major league pitching. Let's talk about Langford and how he is definitely one of the most hyped prospects entering 2024.
Oh, yeah. You're paying a pretty premium for Wyatt Langford. Got to say it in your Ozark voice. Wyatt. But at any point, he doesn't run like Corbin Carroll did last year. So he's not going third round, but he's getting pushed up and pushed up. We're talking about like in the 60 to 70 range overall. I have a little bit of fear of missing out on him. I think I got him in like maybe one home league and one best ball league, and that's about it. So I'm kind of missing out on him. But, I mean, the bat is pure. And he might bat in the middle of that order from day one, which is pretty impressive. And don't forget Evan Carter. Evan Carter is like, at the start of draft season, oh, I can't wait to get Evan Carter. And all of a sudden, Wyatt Langford's eclipsed him, even though Carter was tremendous himself in his own right in the playoffs and has a minor league track record.
I'm going to give you a rookie that's not on your radar like Wyatt Langford is, but still, El Paso's excited. And that's Darryl Hernaiz, the former America's High School star who is only 22 years old, found out he made the Oakland A's roster. He's probably the first El Paso baseball player since Fernie Rodriguez when he pitched for Oakland and Houston and some other teams years ago. Happy to have Darryl in the big leagues and really excited to see what Hernaiz can do when he's given an opportunity.
Well, I mean, he's in the right organization for a chance. I added a projection for him about 3 weeks ago when it looked like there was a good chance he'd make the big league roster. Then they added J.D. Davis, which is going to kind of tighten things up in terms of playing time. But I think Hernaiz will get a little bit of that playing time at shortstop. That isn't like there's not like a strong incumbent there. Whereas like at second base, you've got Geloff there. So I think a Hernaiz give you some stolen bases.
Yeah.
Has a chance, and playing time is currency. The A's, their pitching is still tragic, but they've got the bones of a decent lineup now.
They do. And who else is their starting shortstop? Is it Neil Allen?
Yeah, exactly. So not exactly someone that's going to to really kind of be a huge barrier to clear. If Hernaiz is ready, he's ready. He's going to get some playing time.
When I think of Neil Allen, I think of the New York Mets in the early 1980s.
Pitcher, yeah,
that's right. That's right. And actually one of the better pitchers on that staff in those years. So,
yeah,
very true. All right, more with Jeff as we continue. If you've got any fantasy questions, now's the time to send it in as we swing it on back to Adrian and this SportsCenter update. One correction. I said Neil Allen earlier regarding the shortstop for the Oakland A's. It's Nick Allen. So Nick Allen, not to be confused with Neil Allen, who, yes, was part of the Mets in the late 70s, early 80s, as we continue right now with Jeff Erickson from rotowire.com. All right, let's talk about maybe some names that could be valuable near the start of the season, players that either could have bounce-back years or maybe guys that are completely forgotten that you should kind of stash and hold on to and hope good things happen. Let's start first with bounce-back players, beginning with Luis Severino of the Mets.
Yeah, pretty good spring. A lot of people were excited about what he was able to accomplish, and, I can see it. I can see, see where he, he might be someone that, once was a, starting pitcher two, basically, for your fantasy team. It could happen. I kind of like what the Mets did with their pitching. 12-1 K to walk for Severino this spring. I like Quintana a little bit. I think he's got his uses. I think Minaya could be interesting. Good K to walk last year. It's just a shame that they lost Senga because I think he was kind of nice at the top of that there and took a little bit of pressure off these other guys. But I wouldn't mind having Severino in a league or two. I did get shut out on him, but not for like lack of trying to get him.
Are you buying Jack Flaherty or Casey Mize this year in Detroit?
Not really. I like that Flaherty increases velocity again. I'd like to see him maintain it. Durability has always been a big problem for him. And the pitching park is right at least, but I'm having a hard time. I mean, I can't put out of my mind how bad he was with Baltimore,
yep,
and now how he was up so mercurial with St. Louis last year. I can't imagine him doing it on a week-in, week-out basis there. Casey Mize, he's got the pedigree, just hasn't had the strikeouts. The fact that Detroit, though, had the depth to send down Matt Manning tells me that at least Flaherty and Mize won the jobs as opposed to, just a default sort of placing.
How about a pair of young arms in Chicago with the White Sox, Garrett Crochet and Mike Soroka? Soroka was thought to be a breakthrough arm in Atlanta. It never happened due to injuries. Crochet had Tommy John and has come back from that and been in the bullpen. Do you think either of these two become must-own guys this season?
I mean, Crochet has the possibility of that for sure. Soroka had a mix of pitchability, but it's been so long since he's had any meaningful outings there. hard to bank too much on him, and he's never been a much of a strikeout guy. With Crochet, there's a whole set of guys that are, you know, transitioning from relief work to starting. It's him, it's Jordan Hicks, A.J. Puck.
Yep.
Michael King did it last year, half a season. Now he's full-time starting this year. There's a lot of these guys this year, and it's hard to handicap what they're going to be able to do. I think it's worth taking, you know, a late round upside stab at him. I wouldn't want him as one of my first nine, but I think as someone that I can stash, great. I mean, he is an opening day starter for the White Sox here. I'd like to see him cash in on that potential, but I also kind of need to see it before I start him.
I'm fascinated with the Jordan Hicks experiment this year in San Francisco.
Yeah, I was a doubter on him, and he's so far, he's making me look silly because he's had a phenomenal spring, looked great in his last outing. He's making people flail. The thing about Hicks in the past is the stuff has always been tremendous. The durability, again, has been the big issue there, and he's never been able to make it through a season as a starter. So that's why I've been kind of shying away from it. But, man, I hope I'm not wrong on this. I mean, I don't want him to fail, but I hope I'm not totally regretting not getting him too many places. I got him in one league, and it's actually a good spot to get him. I got my NL only home league, mm-hmm. and I got him in the reserve round. So if it does pay off, I've got a really good contract on him.
What about Tyler Wells in Baltimore? Could this be the year he sticks for good in the rotation, or do you think he shifts back to the bullpen when some of their injured starters like John Means and Kyle Bradish get healthy?
I mean, that's certainly a threat. I mean, you've got Dean Kramer in there too right now. Frankly, I'm surprised the O's aren't the team that signed Jordan Montgomery. I think they should have. But, you know, they're a smart team. They know what they're doing. I get it. Tyler Wells, you know, arguably didn't even deserve to get demoted last year. Kind of wore down a little bit down the stretch, but he also wasn't pitching that badly. So, yes, I like adding Tyler Wells. I think he's a guy that, you know, keeps the ball in the zone. I think he doesn't issue that many walks, which means your whip is always going to be pretty decent with him. I like Tyler Wells.
This one comes in late from Victor Neff at Neff Poppy on Twitter and X. Last draft tonight, fifth pick in 12-team league. Corbin, Betts, or Freeman? First question.
I mean, it's just what flavor of ice cream do you like? You know, all three are great. I guess I'd go Betts, but, I mean, you can't go wrong. I think it's the fact that you get second, short, and third eventually for Betts, I mean, that's hard to pass up.
Your thoughts on possible Ohtani suspension, and would you gamble on a first or second round pick?
Choice of words there. I think it is risky. We did a set of rankings called our round table rankings on Friday, and under the context, I was drafting first and then 30th and 31st in the NFBC on Saturday. I asked myself, would I take Ohtani if he came back to me at that 2-3 turn? And the answer was no. So I put him at 34 in my rankings. It's a very conservative rank. I know most people will feel otherwise. I think there's a non-zero chance he faces some discipline. I don't think the whole story adds up. I don't know how quickly the wheels of justice will turn if it is indeed proven that he was the one gambling, which, by the way, I mean, I don't have anything that other than inferences right now. I have no proof, but I know baseball is investigating it. I think it hangs over him a little bit. I've seen him go as high as 5 overall. So, you know, other people are like, I'm going full steam ahead. I don't think it bothered him. I think there's two components, though, too. It's not just the gambling story. It's him coming back from Tommy John, him being UT only. You know, he's starting a throwing program, and as he builds up, you know, he's going to probably even, you know, he'll be starting to work off a mound. Maybe he needs a few extra days off. The Dodgers are kind of notorious for resting their guys a little bit. So, I could be wrong, and maybe I'll even change up a little bit and be a little bit more optimistic on him, but I can't see taking him in the first round with my dime. Other people can do it, and good luck to you.
I'm just going to tell you right now, I believe you 100%, and I'm all about exactly what you talked about right now, and I do think he has involvement. There's no way that this went down without involvement. To me, that's ridiculous. But more will come out, and the only question is, will it come out during the season, and will it affect potentially a top pick? So I'm with you. I would be conservative, too, with that. Last one from Neff Poppy. Is Garrett Cole headed for the 60-day IL?
I don't know for sure on that one there. I haven't seen any reports saying that he will, but I also have him missing at least that amount of time, so we'll see. I think the Yankees will probably want to keep their options open, but you know, if they add another guy to the 40-man roster, then all things all, you know, then that's an option there. I think that if push comes to shove and the Yankees need to claim someone who isn't already on their 40-man roster, well, that is a pathway they can take to go ahead and get that there. Put Cole on their 60-day IL, and that just allows them to buy some time. But I haven't seen that yet.
We already have rainouts for tomorrow, and the games haven't even started yet, and we already have two postponements to Friday.
But see, that's normal. I think opening day, you don't mess around. You just, if there's rain in the forecast, and significantly so, you know, don't have them show up. Don't, you know, I think this is actually a pretty smart play, Phillies and the Mets both, if I recall
yep,
correctly,
right.
Both in that boat.
That's right.
So, yeah, it's interesting what that's going to do. If I'm in one league where we set our lineups Monday through Thursday and then Friday through Saturday. So, you know, get those guys out of your lineup for that Monday through Thursday if you got someone else that can slot in. Just you can max it out there. Usually it's with the hitters only. Usually they don't have midweek changes with pitching.
Yeah, and by the way, there's no really rain in the forecast right now for Friday. So Brewers, Mets, and Braves, Phillies have been moved to Friday. And the scheduled starters are just pushed back a day. So it all works out.
Right. And there's built-in off days. You know, everybody plays, well, we're scheduled to play on Thursday, but I think there's only 8 games that were originally on the schedule for Friday. So,
yeah.
You know, a lot of teams in bad weather towns that are potential bad weather towns anticipate that. And obviously, if you have a dome or if you're in Southern California or Texas or Miami, I mean, you're probably not, well, Miami's got a dome anyhow, but you're not really doing that where you might just play the full 4 games. For instance, Arizona does have 4 games against Colorado.
Did you like the Will Smith 10-year extension by the Dodgers today?
Dodgers doing Dodger things there, yeah. I mean, hey, you know, you've developed a player. This ensures he basically finishes his career. I'm sure there's some series of opt-outs there. I haven't dug into the details a little bit there, but lock up your good young players, absolutely.
Yep. And it also means that for prospects like Diego Cartaya and Dalton Rushing, they can either be nice backups or find a new position or get traded someplace.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that is one of the sides of the business there that these guys are going to look at there. But you know what? I mean, injuries happen sometimes.
Yep.
You know, you can move. Someday maybe they'll move Smith to first base or DH, although they have Freeman and Ohtani, so probably not. But, you know, it just gives them a little bit of flexibility there. And, you know, one or both of them might get traded for pitching sometime down the road, too.
That's very true. Preview what you've got up at rotowire.com. Tons and tons of stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I keep on updating rankings. I wrote up my article for the NFBC main event over the weekend. Where, you know, James Anderson just came out with a brand new top 400 prospect list. So, you know, one of the favorite features on RotoWire, it's up on the site right now. And he updated his dynasty rankings along with that there, so you can check that out. RotoWire.com/free gives you a free peek behind the paywall. No credit cards required. We've been doing some form of this free trial for over 20 years. It's now a couple of days. All you do is put in a valid email address and off you go. If you don't want to subscribe, well, it just goes away. But if you do, now you've had a taste and you see what you like.
I love it. Again, that's all happening right now at rotowire.com. Definitely check that out. I'm excited about that. I need to look at the top 400. I need to look at your projections for Darwin Hernández. Did you have some good projections when you changed it a few weeks ago?
Oh, yeah. You know, I'm constantly doing changes. I mean, Paul Sewell gets hurt. We knock down his projection. We add some saves to Ginkle, you know, things like that. And I've had to add some players, too, like, you know, Stanton from Tampa Bay going to make the opening day roster. Let players at that sort of level, you know, we always have to kind of scramble like, oh, this guy was really good in the minors. Better give him a decent projection.
I love it. All right. Well, listen, we'll look forward to having you back next week. Talk more fantasy then. As always, appreciate the time and looking forward to what should be a great opening day tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, Steve.
Jeff Erickson, folks, as we continue here on Sports Talk. 5:44 now the time. We'll come back, wrap up hour number 2. Still to come, Kurt Gross, Overfly Sports. He'll join us inside our 600 ESPN El Paso River Oaks property, Schoolyard Sports Studios, as we continue. Actually, I've been excited about the whole show. In fact, we had both Jay Jaffe and Jeff Erickson joining us earlier on our Longhorn Distributing Hotline. Longhorn Distributing in the middle of El Paso is where the professional dealers shop for their supplies. And by the way, the McLaren Formula One detail products are now available at Longhorn Distributing, 5516 East Paisano, 2 blocks south of I-10. And all of our guests on the phone always join us via the Longhorn Distributing 600 ESPN El Paso Hotline. Now in studio, we have Kurt Gross back with us from Overfly Sports and Overfly Bats, and he is going to talk a little baseball with us as we are ready for opening day tomorrow. Welcome back to the show. It's probably been a busy spring for you, hasn't it?
It's been crazy, Steve. Thank you, and happy opening day eve. Great time of year for sure.
It really is. So this year, did you travel to both Florida and Arizona?
I did. Both my partner and I hit both spring training markets. It was a whirlwind trip, back and forth, seeing as many players as we can, mm-hmm. making the most out of that time. But certainly spend a lot more time in Arizona than we do in Florida. But,
well, yeah, let's put it this way. You do well with the Cardinals. You've had Lars Nootbaar since his rookie season. Now all of a sudden it's morphing into potentially Nolan Arenado. Yep. So when it comes to the Cardinals, then you're traveling to the Grapefruit League to make sure you get to see those guys personally.
Yeah, for sure. We had success with Lars, and that kind of blew up for big time last year with the WBC happening. And then got a call this offseason, right around Thanksgiving actually, from Nolan. And so went and visited with both of them. Lars was hurt when I was down there, but visited with Arenado, and then Nolan Gorman, the other Nolan, mm-hmm. Came on board too. So he started swinging our bats as well. So it's been great working with the Cardinals, a great organization.
Is that a team that trains out in St. Pete?
No, the Cardinals are on the other side in West Palm Beach.
Okay, West Palm.
Jupiter, I'm sorry.
Jupiter? Okay, yeah, that's right. West Palm used to actually be the Expos years ago, back when they were still around.
A long time ago.
It is a very long time ago. By the way, you go to Arizona, you could pretty much cover all of every site and go from one to another in about a 25-mile or 25-minute radius. You got to drive hours to get through the Grapefruit League. In fact, did you see every team in Florida, or did you only go to some?
Yeah, no, I had very limited time in Florida this year, just the way the schedule worked out and everything. So just visited with four teams. Did the Cardinals for sure, visit with the Marlins, that's another team we work with, the Nationals, and the Astros as well. So Jupiter, West Palm Beach area. So that was the extent of my trip.
Any chance you could start getting bats into the hands of James Wood, because he is going to be living up to his last name very soon?
Yeah, for sure. I visited with James this offseason, and he's swinging the axe handle, which we don't make at this particular time. But I think if we did make some bats for him, he does have them. It wouldn't surprise me if he started using them this season at some point.
Now, you said the axe handle. That's important, because I always like when you throw good baseball bat lingo, we can explain it to our listeners. Yeah. Who invented the axe handle as far as bats go?
Well, the axe handle is – there's two companies that make a similar type handle. There's one called the axe, and it's very like an axe handle for the listeners out there. Very similar to what you see to going in Home Depot or something, mm-hmm. and seeing that an actual axe. Little more comfortable on the bottom hand for some players, especially players that are dealing with the hamate bone, which is a small bone in the bottom of your finger area there on your hand. And then there's another company called ProXR. It's a little bit wider, and they have a couple different styles. So those are the two different models. I really don't know the name of the guys that invented them, but those are the two that are out there right now.
I know. I thought Rocker Jack White has his bat company, and he has some big leaguers in there as well.
Yeah, Warstick is the name of their company. They do a great job out of Dallas.
That's right. So he's swinging an axe for now. By the way, I'm looking at some of the handles that you're making for C.J. Abrams, and they might not be axe handles, but they're definitely unique. It almost looks like a giant mushroom at the very bottom of the bat.
Yeah, so C.J.'s known as the alien, and we call it the Alien 5, since his number is 5, and it resembles a big alien head, actually. So a little modification this year over last year. It'll be interesting to see if that that sticks with him this season. He likes to change bats a lot. So the Nationals were a fun team. That CJ led off the game last year with a home run, and then before you know it, I think it was four out of the next five guys in the lineup were swinging CJ's bat.
So really?
We were joking about that last, and actually three of the four got hit, so worked out well for us, but we got a kick out of that when we were down there in spring training this year.
It's good to see that guys aren't superstitious when it comes to swinging bats, right?
Yeah, right. They're very superstitious about the bats that they use, but you know what? If you make a good product and are consistent with it, you provide good service, that's what we're all about, and we've had success so far.
Do you have other players on the Nats besides CJ who's ordering your bats right now?
Yeah, so we're working with Joey Meneses. Got some samples out to him. For the season. We're also working with Carter Kieboom. Mm-hmm. Probably will start in AAA, but it wouldn't be surprised if he makes it back up. There's a couple other guys in the minor league side that we're working with. We actually signed the top international signing for the Nationals this year, number 5 on the top 20 list. So young kids that we're planting seeds down in the real young minor leagues all the way up to the pro levels.
I know you worked with Daryl Hernaiz the last couple of off seasons. He's come in. He swung the bats. How excited were you when you heard the news that Daryl's going to be breaking camp with Oakland?
Oh, that's so cool. I mean, Daryl's such a great guy. Wish him nothing but the best. He has swung our bats in the past. He's got an agreement with Louisville Slugger. But we'll see. I'm sure, we'll get an opportunity to work with Daryl again. But great, great kid. So excited for him and his family. And I really think he's going to have success in Oakland. It's a great setting for him. Let's see what happens with the Oakland franchise as it moves forward. But we're just so excited. Couldn't have happened for a greater kid. And he works so hard. So, those folks here in El Paso that are listening and haven't been to a high school game, the level of high school baseball here in El Paso is outstanding. And Daryl's a great example of that, taking it all the way to the major leagues.
Yeah, he is. In fact, I'll say this about Daryl. He's hit everywhere he's been. I mean, he's one of these guys that hit coming right out of pro ball, and it's been that kind of a career trajectory. He might not have the power that some of these guys has, but he's easily somebody that could be a 300 hitter in the big leagues with 10 to 15 home runs every year.
There's no question. And Daryl's strong. So if you haven't seen Daryl in a while, Daryl is strong. It wouldn't surprise me if he puts up 20 bombs. Oakland may be a hard place to do it, but yeah. I guarantee you he's got more power than it would appear to be.
Kurt, you mentioned that Daryl's got a contract right now out with Louisville Slugger. Let's talk about these bat companies, because I know you have agreements as well, but sometimes do you almost enjoy working with players that don't have agreements, maybe yourself included, because that way they can try the bats and they don't feel necessarily that they're so tied to one company that they can't make a change if they want to?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you talked about it before, players being superstitious about their bats, right? And the same goes true. I mean, you may be in a slump and you want to be able to pick up something new, something different, try something. That happens a lot with our bats throughout the season. We work with one guy, the next thing you know, like, for example, CJ Abrams, the story that we just said, hit a home run, the next thing you know, four out of the next five guys are swinging that exact bat. So that gives us as a bat maker an opportunity to get in the hands of some of these other players. This season, this offseason, in fact, we've talked with a lot of players, a lot of agents who have ended their agreements this past year with Louisville Slugger in particular, and has given us an opportunity to work with them. You know, Nolan Arenado, that was really swinging one bat for his entire career to this point. Now, all of a sudden, I think this spring training, we're one of four bat companies that he's been, trying out. So.
Good. I mean, I feel like that's the way it should be, and maybe it's better that way, because what that will do is it'll get your bats into the hands of more and more players. And if the bats do what they're supposed to do and players get good use out of them and get good success out of them, they're going to keep swinging them. That's just what it's all about.
Yeah, absolutely. I was talking to Eduardo Perez when I was in Miami Marlins camp, and he was talking to Josh Bell, doing an interview with him. And he was saying, it's never the player's fault. It's always the bat's fault. And he looks over at me and we're kind of laughing and joking about it. But, yeah, gives the opportunity for players to try different things. They're not tied into one particular company, and especially if that company is not living up to the level of service or expectations that they want.
I'm happy you mentioned Josh Bell, because he spent some time in El Paso when he was with San Diego and coming back from the injured list. He's bounced around. Now he's found a home in Miami. I'm sure he's probably familiar with you and your bats to begin with, just from his time here. Any chance we could see Josh Bell swinging them this year?
Maybe if we can get the axe handle agreement done. That would be another one that he uses pretty often. So hopefully that will change and we'll be able to do that as well.
How do you get an agreement for something like that? Do you have to then pay baseball? Do you pay the people that trademarked it to begin with? How does a company like Overfly develop a new handle that certain players are really wanting to use?
Well, in the case of like CJ Abrams, for example, that handle and knob that you talked about, that's something that's unique that we developed for CJ and his dad during the offseason and perfected it over the course of a couple months. Something like that, we work with players a lot of times more on the traditional handle side, how big it is, how small it is, how curved it is, whatever the case may be. In the case of the axe handle in particular, those are patents that you know, people own. Mm-hmm. So you have to pay the rights to use them, one, but then you have to figure out how to make them because they're not symmetrical, right? They're asymmetric. So yeah. There's a whole other kind of technology component that, you know, that we would have to incorporate in order to manufacture them.
Did you patent that new handle you've got for CJ?
We're talking to a couple of attorneys right now to see if it's something that we should do. Well, it's an expensive process and it takes time, but it's so different. I'm not sure it would catch on. The one from last year actually has more legs for something like that.
Interesting. I just wonder about that, because if you're on to something special and then all of a sudden more and more players want to start using it and you have the patent, that could be something that could really come in handy for you down the road.
Exactly, exactly. It's stuff that we've talked about. And I think as we spend more and more time in the business, probably those are things that we'll take a closer look at.
Adrian, I can't wait to let you see this big mushroom handle that they've developed for this season. It's a wild bat, and it's one of those that when you try to when you grip it for the first time and you position your hands on it, you're like, wow, that is completely different than anything you've ever swung before.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right here. It is so interesting. I'm looking at it from where I'm at. This is unlike a bat I've seen ever before. We got to put like a video on our Instagram channel, Steve, to let our listeners check it out so they could see, you know, a video version of this.
Yeah, maybe we can just have Kurt explain it and then give everybody the lowdown of each of the bats he brought, and then we throw that on the IG page and let people check that today. That'd be good.
Yeah, I think so too. And we can cross share that. I think people really need to see this. This is so innovative, and it feels like a true pioneer in the sport.
It is. It's completely different, but it's fun. And by the way, that bat that you're holding right now, that's the bat that essentially you make all the other bats out of, right? That's the mold that you created to make these. How difficult is it to actually perfect one bat that is the master bat that every other copy comes from?
Well, in this particular case for CJ, it was months actually of back and forth with CJ. He's not here in El Paso, although when he was in El Paso playing for the Chihuahuas, he was in the shop pretty often hitting, especially when his dad was in town. And we played with a couple different models, you know, throughout that time. But this one took a couple months to actually perfect and get the weight down right. And really what makes it different is how it feels in the bottom hand. In particular for CJ, it was his pinky, and so he wanted something to almost push off of, if you will, on his pinky. So that's how that was developed.
CJ, by the way, one of the popular choices to have a serious breakout this season. He had a great year last year, and he could just explode this year, which is very possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think as the Nationals develop as a team, they get some of these young talent in. You talked about James Wood already. CJ is going to be instrumental in that team moving forward, and I expect big things out of CJ. I think, you know, it's daunting to come in. People forget how young he is. To come into the major leagues at his age, I think there's a really, really bright future for him ahead.
Love it. All right, more with Kurt as we continue. If you've got questions, now's the time to get them in. 505-6009. You can also hit us up on social and X at 600 ESPN El Paso. We'll do more in a moment, but first let's go to Charlie One and get this traffic update.
In El Paso Metroplex, we're not doing too bad. We have on the west side, Upper Valley, maybe South Desert and Enchanted Springs, we have a stalled big rig, but taking up a lane there, South Desert and Enchanted Springs. Taking care of a wreck should be just about finished up. Missing executive tow truck activity will be there. Tapping the brakes a little bit. I-10 East, Copia to Reynolds. I-10 West, Mesa to Red. And Leo's Restaurant, 7520 Remcon. We're going to be closed on Easter. But we have the family-owned and operated. We have home of the first pastor's first of papillas since 1946. We have the flautas, fajitas, gorditas, chicken, and mole. Much more famous tortilla soup. Happy Easter from Leo's Restaurant, 7520 Remcon. Let's look at traffic. Charlie 1600, ESPN El Paso.
To pick up and see the latest and greatest designs for these new bats with CJ Abrams. Adrian, what'd you like the best?
Well, I love the engraving. I mean, just to see that and to actually feel the different grooves that go into the engraving that's at the bottom of the bat, that's so unique right there. I've never seen a bat like this. Like, even you just look at it, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that this one is unlike any other bats that they have out there.
Alberto, what about you? You played baseball, so when you had a chance to try to pick some of those up, what'd you think?
Yeah, I like the different handles that they offer and the quality of the bats that were phenomenal. And like Adrian said, the engraving is really cool, and I like how you can customize that. Anybody can ultimately get something designed there.
So are we talking now, as we go back to Kurt here from Overfly, are players still ordering mostly maple? Is birch becoming more and more popular? What are we talking about as far as the types of bats?
Yeah, about 88% of the bats that we make are maple. Birch is growing. Every year it seems like birch takes another tick up. So we're about 12, 13% now for birch.
Okay, and does anybody use ash anymore, or is that completely gone?
No, it's crazy. Every now and again, Manny Machado, we make a few ash bats for every year. Tyler Locklear, prospect with the Mariners, he ordered some ash bats. It just depends what players will give us a ring. But once they find out that we still are making ash, a lot of bat companies don't. So we still make a small percentage of ash bats. So we get the ash, and then we have it on hand for those players that request it during the year.
So ash, birch, and maple are the big three.
Yeah, those are the three that we use.
Do you ever expect another type of wood to ever come into play like those have over the years?
Yeah, there's one that's out there right now called European beechwood that is just got its MLB was allowed in MLB last season.
Okay,
we'll have to see how that. I haven't really played around with that species at all, so we'll have to see how that goes.
Where do you get it from?
I don't get it at all. Do
they even make European beechwood in the States, or is that something you have to fly in overseas?
We'd have to get it from overseas, most likely. I think it's more of a Japanese wood. I really don't know much about the species at all. There's not a demand on the professional side for it yet. I don't know one player that swings it. It's more along the lines I want to have it ready and have turned a few bats with it before it gains any type of momentum at all.
Since we talk about bats as species, I'll just ask you, which species do you enjoy working with the most? What's the most fun when you're in the shop, you're designing these bats, you're getting them nicely shaped and ready to go and polished? For you, what's the best?
Birch is my favorite wood, for sure. It's gives you a little bit of flexibility like the ash wood does, and it's almost as dense and as hard as maple. And just as a woodworker, it's really nice to work with. You get really nice color variation. Again, as a player, some players may not like that. In birch, you can use more of the heartwood, which is kind of a darker, more of the middle cut of the wood.
Yeah.
But it's really, really pretty.
Since you become a carpenter designing these bats, have you started taking baseball bats and making them like as legs on benches and starting to bring home to your wife more furniture that now has some baseball themes to it?
There's a lot of ideas that go through my head as I'm making more bats, but yes. Honestly, I don't have enough time to really fool around with any of that. But for sure, there's ideas all the time that we could do stuff with, for sure.
Oh, my God. It's got to be amazing when you start to really think about using some of the wood and what you could potentially do. That would be cool.
Absolutely.
I do think that a really cool coffee table with baseball bat legs would be would be amazing. That would be pretty special.
Yeah, for sure. That chairs, a lot of chairs out there, mm-hmm. too, made it.
That's
made
right.
bats. So
that's right.
Yeah, all different kinds of stuff you could do for sure. But you know what? By the time I get home, I think the last thing Robin wants me to bring home is another baseball bat.
Yeah, you imagine if you told Robin, "Hey, I'm going to start designing furniture," she's probably going to look at you like you're out of your mind.
Yeah,
let's come up with something else, please.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
That's good. In terms of your big league clients, do we have more players starting 2024 swinging Overfly than we had previously?
Yeah. Our player roster has grown exponentially. We talked about contracts expiring earlier. So we have, not under agreement, but we have Eloy Jimenez for the White Sox be swinging our bats. We talked about Arenado already. Jamer Candelario with the Reds. The Reds are an exciting team. We'll have to see a few injuries there, so we'll have to see what happens. But he'll be swinging our bats. And then, like I said, a lot in the minor leagues. We're investing a lot in the next, kind of the emerging players. Spring training, we got to see some of the breakout games and those players using the bats. From the major league to AAA and probably guys that we're going to see coming up this season in MLB, like I said, down to kids that have just signed, out of the DR.
Do we have some top 100 prospects in MLB that could be swinging Overfly this year?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've got the number 2 prospect for the Astros who'll be swinging our bats. We've got pretty much every club. If you look at the top 30 prospects, every club we have at least one prospect on the list that'll be swinging overfly.
And how about Padres, considering the Chihuahuas are here in your backyard? Have any of the players, since they arrived, head over yet to check it out?
Not yet. I think they're getting ready to head out to Albuquerque. I expect to visit with some of them next week for sure, when the homestand starts. Padres are an exciting team. You know, we've seen Jackson Merrill now on the big league club. He's special, let me tell you. We worked with Jackson early on in his career, and right when he was drafted. He's going to be a special, special talent for the Padres. But we've got some young kids, even the guys that they've traded away. Sammy Zavala now with the White Sox, exceptional talent there. Graham Pauly, who maybe in El Paso maybe sometime this year. He's with the big league club right now.
Yep, second, so hopefully third he stays up there. Right.
Yeah,
he's
spectacular. A lot of talent in the Padres organization.
You told me a lot about Jackson Merrill. You said 2 years ago, keep an eye on this kid. He's going to be something. He's going to be something special.
Yeah, we have a great relationship with the Padres, with the Chihuahuas being here, and everything from the front office down to the clubbies. It's kind of our home clubhouse, if you will, when we're in spring training. And we get to know a lot of their prospects really, really well and early in their career. And Jackson's one that we knew early on he was going to be very special.
Are there any Powerball bats left in big league clubhouses, or is it sad to say that Powerball has officially been put to rest and now it's been replaced completely by Overfly for you?
You never say never. We made about 10,000 bats in the 4 years before we merged with Overfly. So I never say never. I wouldn't be surprised if I saw one at some point in time this season, but after this season, probably not.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, bats do have eventually like a shelf life, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I was talking with a player, Kyle Martin, who was here with the Chihuahuas, and just texted him like 2 days ago, and he was telling me that he still has one that he uses in BP religiously, and he'll never get rid of that bat. So you'll never know where they'll pop up for sure.
It's kind of fun. The BP bats now, a lot of those will get wrapped, and if they've been cracked, they'll keep them. A lot of players, even if they crack a bat, if it's a bat they love, they want to use it as long as they possibly can, right?
Yeah, and they'll swing it maybe in BP, maybe not from, off a machine, off a coach at full speed. It may be something that they're just working off the mm-hmm. tee or whatever. But, yeah, when they have a bat that they really like, it could last for years, really.
I believe it. All right, when we come back, we're going to get Kurt's thoughts on the season. Ohtani, predictions, division winners, what he like, who he likes, rookie of the year, MVP, all that stuff. So we'll get that going and keep things moving with Kirk Gross from Overfly Sports right after Adrian Broaddus and one last bottom of the hour Sports Center update.
Thank you very much, Steve. Let's go over to the NBA scoreboard right now. The Hornets lead the Cavs 86-85, 6 to go in the third quarter, and it's Brandon Miller, the sensational rookie, leading the way for Charlotte. 21 points here for Charlotte in this matchup. Let's go over to Orlando. Warriors still hanging on to a big lead against the Magic. 58-44 on the road, 7 minutes to go here in the third quarter. Steph Curry, he's heating up right now, 12.6 assists here in this matchup. Let's go over to D.C. The Wizards with a slight 70-69 lead against the Nets here with 7 minutes to go in the third quarter. Jordan Poole leading the way for Washington with 16.7 assists. Meanwhile, Cam Thomas with 26 for Brooklyn. Going over to Atlanta, Hawks up by 6 against the Trailblazers, 57-51, 2 to go here in the first half. DeJounte Murray with 15 to lead the way for Atlanta. On ESPN right now, as part of tonight's doubleheader, 76ers up 45-39 against the Clippers. 3 to go here in the first half. Kelly Oubre Jr. leading the way for Philly with 11 points. Meanwhile, James Harden has 10 for the Clippers. Again, this one on ESPN. Also, under 3 minutes to go here in the first half. Knicks on top of the Raptors, 70-51, and Jalen Brunson, he's killing it right now. 16.6 assists for the Knicks in this matchup. Bulls up in this matchup against the Pacers, 19-17 with a minute 45 left here in the first quarter. And Ayo Dosunmu leading the way for Chicago, 8 points to lead the way for him. Meanwhile, out in Memphis, Lakers up 30-23 against the Grizzlies with 2 minutes to go in the first quarter. That's a look at your SportsCenter update. I'm Adrian Broaddus.
Adrian, thank you very much. All right, we're back with Kirk Gross right now from Overfly Sports. You've had the opportunity to spend weeks upon weeks at spring training. You've talked to players. You've talked to clubbies. You know teams. Give me your thoughts as we head into the season of what to expect as far as some of the teams to beat and teams you really like right now.
Yeah, I think it's hard to have a conversation like that when you don't mention the Dodgers. They've got a lot going on, obviously, in their clubhouse right now. But
they do.
You know, in their camp, they seem really relaxed. They're always super professional, great club. I expect them to represent the National League well. But you know what? I think the Phillies are going to come back. Something tells me the Phillies, this is their year. They were close last year. I think they're going to represent the National League in the World Series for sure.
Wow, you like the Phillies over the Braves because the Braves are a team that's still pretty stacked now.
Braves
in the AL
East. Are talented. Yeah. No doubt about it. I think the Phillies pitching is going to withstand the trials and tribulations of the season. Great talented club, Bryce Harper, of course, and I think they're going to be a top team, and then the Dodgers are going to be right there. Don't sleep on the Padres, though. We got our hometown team here. The Padres are going to surprise some people this year, for sure.
Well, the Diamondbacks surprised people all the way to the World Series last year, and they just added Jordan Montgomery a couple of days ago. Yeah, so
huge pickup.
I know we talk about don't sleep on teams. Don't sleep on the Diamondbacks.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, and you never know. Another hometown boy in Ivan Melendez, maybe he gets a shot, you know, this season at some point. You never know what happens, and rooting for him for sure.
Has Ivan swung the Overfly lumber before?
He has once or twice. He's one I think that he's, you know, as he develops throughout his career, he's going to find a bat company and a model that he really likes. Maybe it's us.
I hope so.
Great kid.
All right. So that's your pick out of the National League. You didn't mention the Central. Do you like anybody in the Central right now?
You know, I think the Central's wide open. The Cubs on the National League side, the Cubs for sure. You know, we've got a lot of bats in the Cardinals organization, so I'd be foolish to bet against them. I think that, you know, coming off a really tough season last year for the Cardinals, they're going to get back on track. I expect a big year from Nolan. Whether he uses our bats or not, I think he's going to have a great season. Goldie will have a great season. If they can stay injury-free, you know, they're relying on some pitchers that are a little bit older. But with that comes a ton of experience. And in that division, I think that they'll be a wild card team for sure.
All right. Now let's move to the American League. Rangers win it all last year. Yeah. Do you expect them back in the AL West to be where they were, or do you think there's going to be some pretty stiff competition from teams like the Astros and even the Mariners?
I think the Mariners may surprise some people. I really like the Mariners pitching. They've got some real young talent too, Tyler Locklear as well. So they've got some young guys coming up on the Mariners side. It's very, very tough to repeat in this business. But the Rangers are bringing some talent. We talked about Wyatt Langford. Evan Carter. Evan's a super kid too. I remember when he first got drafted, we met with him out in Phoenix, and just a really laid back, super, super great kid. Wish him nothing for the best. He was swinging Powerballs, so if there's a Powerball out there, he may have one still too.
Yeah. Oh, that's good stuff. In fact, last year, it's a great story. Evan Carter plays here towards the end of the season, gets called up to Texas, and has such a big impression, he stays on the roster all the way through the series.
You know, what was hilarious is Evan texts me the day before, and he's like, hey, can I come by the shop tomorrow? I said, yeah, sure. What time do you want to come by? He says, well, maybe around lunchtime. I said, that's great. And then the next thing you know, he says, hey, I'm going up to the big leagues. So that was really, really cool.
That is really cool. And he's never been down since then. That's the best part. Yeah,
absolutely. He is really a fantastic kid. I wish him nothing but the best. Super, super talented and just really down to earth.
Who do you like in the AL Central this year?
You know, that's going to be, again, one of those – the Central divisions are wide open. I think the Guardians are going to always be part of that equation as well. The Twins are going to be tough to beat. I don't follow a lot of pitchers, But I hope that the pitching staff does well in Minnesota, and Paddock does really well. He has a good season.
I'm sure the Guardians hold a special place in your heart because Franmil Reyes swung some bats over there when he was in Cleveland after going from San Diego to Cleveland and back in the early days of your business.
Absolutely. The Guardians, the Indians/Guardians clubhouse, has always been really, really good to us. That is a really fun – if there's any El Pasoans that want to go to spring training and see, I highly recommend – checking out the Indians camp. They are first class. We always have a lot of fun when we're there in camp. And we've got a couple of young, talented prospects coming up on the Indian side. Juan Brito, who wouldn't surprise me at all if he gets some time in the big leagues this season, actually probably early on in the season. He'll be swinging our bats. I think that they're always part of the equation in the Central.
Yeah.
So I don't think you can count them out as well. And it wouldn't surprise me if they won the Central.
All right, so that takes us to the East. Who do we like in the East? Yankees. You've got, again, a terrific Baltimore team that's just young and fun. I mean, if there's ever a clubhouse in Florida you want to get into, it's that Baltimore Orioles clubhouse.
Yeah. I mean, there is so much talent and young talent in that clubhouse. It's amazing. And you look at someone like Darryl, who was in that clubhouse and now has the opportunity to play because there was just so much talent in Baltimore. They felt that they could get rid of a talent like Darryl, and he's going to make a mark in Oakland. I don't know how you bet against the Orioles. They're just so talented, but I expect a big season out of the Blue Jays too.
I think so also. And then have you ever been to a Yankees clubhouse before?
I have not been to the Yankees clubhouse. So that's one that, you know, we have to make some time and do. We do have a young player in Everson Perea that uses our bats. So I need to spend some time and get over there to visit with him. But there, you know, the Yankees, with Soto now on the team, you know, if their pitching can hold up, they'll be part of the equation as well.
Is Overfly represented in every club in baseball, either major or minor league? Do you have somebody in every organization swinging a bat?
Yep, absolutely.
All right, that's good news.
Yeah, this is the first season that we can say without a doubt that we've got someone in affiliated ball with every single of the 30 clubs.
You met Shohei Ohtani in the clubhouse before all this stuff happened and went down. What was it like for you just getting a chance to see him up close?
It was great. I mean, it was that clubhouse was crazy. So I was there right before the game started, the week before game started. So when I was there, there were probably 75 or 80 media outlets that were there to talk to the players and covering the Dodgers. The week before, there were triple the amount. So there were basically media outlets there covering the media outlets that were there covering the Dodgers. So it was a crazy scenario. But you know, they're very respectful, and the Dodgers, like I said, run a very professional, culture there in the clubhouse. So I was standing right outside the clubhouse, and they opened the clubhouse to media prior to the workouts and then after the workouts. And so the players know that if they're in the locker room at a certain time, the doors open and media are allowed to come in. And about 3 minutes before that designated time, Shohei walked out with his translator. Walked by me and in perfect English said, "See you guys later. Good to see you. See you later." And walked right by. The media knows that since he's not in the clubhouse, they're off limits. He walked right by everybody and to his car, and he was out of there.
That's good.
But yeah, it was crazy. I mean, it was literally a circus with everybody there in camp.
Meanwhile, if people listening have never been to your bat warehouse or what do we officially call it? Bat store?
Yeah,
what
factory.
The factory. If they've been to the bat factory, when should they go? What do they need to do? And what's the best way to describe that experience?
Yeah, so if they're looking at getting a bat, just go online or give us a call. The number's on the website. Overflysports.com. Just come by, make an appointment. They can see how bats are made. You know, we'd like to show as many people as possible what goes into making a bat. That way there's a true appreciation. Just like the professional players, a lot of pros have never seen a bat be turned. So we spend a lot of time with them, and it's fun to learn exactly what it takes to go into it. And when they break, you know, you shed a tear and then move on and make another one. So.
Well, maybe come back and during the season see us again, and we'll have more fun. We'll talk more baseball with you, and we'll see how things are going in the world of Overfly.
Sounds great. Appreciate it. Thanks for having us on, and happy opening day tomorrow.
Happy opening day. Always great to see Kirk Rose, folks, from Overfly Sports joining us. We'll come back, wrap it up next. Sports Talk continues, 600 ESPN El Paso.